Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, here today with Mr. Pat Schlarbaum. Thank you for joining us to listen in.
The weather today, Labor Day, will be mostly cloudy with a high near 84. Calm winds becoming 5 to 7 miles per hour in the afternoon. So it's another beautiful day. Tonight, it'll be partly cloudy with a low around 70. And Tuesday, there is a chance of showers between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m. But it looks like the highs is going to be in the 80s. So we've got more beautiful sunshine predicted for Thursday, Friday, Saturday into Sunday. Highs near the 80s and lows in the high 50s and 60s. Going to be another beautiful week in the neighborhood.
These are the days when we have beautiful weather, right?
These are the days. Isn't it delightful?
These are the days, yeah. Well, thank you. And it is Labor Day, the first Monday of the September, which is almost always beautiful weather. It's Labor Day, the first Monday in September, honoring the American labor movement and the power of collective action by laborers. A federal holiday, Labor Day began being celebrated in the 19th century with the growth of labor unions and trade unions. The first Labor Day parade was in New York City, and it became a state holiday in most of the U.S. before it became a federal holiday in 1894. Ames doesn't have a Labor Day parade, as far as I know, but Pat, you and I were in McGregor this past weekend, and we saw a parade there. I'm not sure it had that much to do with labor. It had more to do with cowboys.
Oh, yeah, the hole in the sock gang.
The hole in the sock
gang. It's quite an urban theater going on in the main street of McGregor, Iowa.
Anyway, it was fun. In today's show, Dave Martin from the Ames City Council will be here for an update, and we'll be talking about some really wonderful community events that are happening during the next hour. Dennis Hart is not with us today live. He's in Washington, D.C., but he still brings us the news. Take it away, Dennis.
Thanks so very much. It is great to be back here with you on this Labor Day Monday. There was plenty of news around the state last week, including word that the Democratic National Committee announced it would not recommend approval of plans by Iowa Democrats to conduct a so-called virtual caucus next February. That would have let registered Democrats take part in the caucuses by telephone rather than by showing up in person. But the DNC worried about voting security issues. The decision complicates planning for the upcoming caucuses and has prompted some to question whether, down the road, Iowa's caucuses should give way to primary elections like most other states have. Also last week, the former head of the Iowa Department of Human Services filed a claim with the state appeal board, asking for $2 million damage for what he alleges was his wrongful firing. Jerry Foxhoven claims Governor Kim Reynolds pushed him out after he questioned whether the department should be paying one of her staff members to help with the state's Medicaid program. The governor responded to the financial claim as she has in the past, saying that many factors went into her decision to ask for Foxhoven's resignation. Meanwhile, the governor spoke out about the Trump administration's recent grant of waivers to 31 oil refineries, letting them off the hook from a requirement to blend more than 1 billion gallons of ethanol and biodiesel into their fuel. The governor said the president may not have understood the damage those and other such waivers have caused, namely that 15 ethanol plants across the nation, including one right here in Iowa, are closing. At the same time, the governor called President Trump an advocate for farmers. On the medical front last week, a Des Moines Medical Center announced it would cease its transplant program entirely. Mercy One Des Moines Medical Center will voluntarily close its kidney and pancreas transplant program after 3 decades, effective October 1st. Mercy One will work with Iowa Methodist Medical Center to help those in need. This past May, Mercy One had announced it would halt its kidney and pancreas transplant programs for at least a year. Now that year has turned into never again. Also last week, word that the chief executive officer of the Iowa Clinic is planning to step down. Ed Brown was said to be in talks with his board of directors as he plans to leave his position after more than 2 decades. The Iowa Clinic is a medical organization with a 170,000-square-foot facility in West Des Moines and with several sites in and around Des Moines. There was word last week that the Boone County YMCA would close in a few weeks because of money troubles. The Y has been at its current location on Carroll Street for 14 years. The board of directors of the YMCA of Greater Des Moines voted to close the facility. It had provided nearly $1 million over the past 10 years to keep the Boone Y open. The board also told the city of Indianola last week that it has 1 year to resolve the Y's money troubles there, or it too will close. In another story, MidAmerican Energy said a plan to require wind turbines to be built a mile and a half away from the nearest homes in Madison County would wipe out development in the state if other counties follow suit. The Madison County Board of Health is recommending that the turbines be built farther from homes. County supervisors there have taken no action on the board's recommendation. 37% of all of Iowa's electricity comes from wind. Meanwhile, last week, ground was broken in Des Moines for a new $137 million federal courthouse along the Des Moines River. City leaders had fought the government's plan to build on that site for years because they wanted someone to build a combination housing, retail, and restaurant venue. But now they say they're on board with the government's plan. There was also word that Metro Waste, the company that runs the Polk County landfill, planned to build its own recycling center. It will cost about $24 million and be able to handle up to 45,000 tons of recyclables each year. Also in Des Moines last week, there was word that the city would lower the minimum size requirements for new single-family homes in order to ease builder concerns that size demands could halt new home construction. The city has reduced the size requirement by 100 to 400 square feet per home. There was also a report that a Utah-based investment firm that is known for raising the rent at mobile home communities in central and eastern Iowa had bought another park. Haven Park Capital Partners finalized its purchase of the new Horizons Mobile Home Park in Huxley, and the company has informed residents that starting in November, they will get an 11% rate hike. Also last week, the Hy-Vee grocery chain advised customers to monitor their bank accounts for any unusual activity after the company said it had detected possible security issues with payment processing systems at some of its fuel pumps, drive-through coffee shops, and restaurants. Among the steps that customers could take, freeze their credit, set a victim fraud alert on credit reports, and closely monitor credit card and bank accounts. Speaking of Hy-Vee, there was word last week that a Des Moines artist had sued the company because it had used pictures of his mural in the Riverbend neighborhood in a commercial that aired during the Super Bowl. Chris Williams filed a copyright infringement lawsuit. The ad was narrated by Oprah Winfrey. It highlighted a partnership between Hy-Vee and Oprah's Oh, That's Good brand. Also last week, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources reported that hundreds of deer in the south-central part of the state had died after contracting a debilitating virus. More than 400 deer had died from the virus. In Jefferson County, a former Fairfield police officer accused of stealing painkillers from a southeastern Iowa veterinary clinic was given 5 years probation. 31-year-old Ryan Mills was also fined $1,000. Authorities said Mills stole opioids from the clinic several times. Meanwhile, a federal grand jury convicted a Des Moines real estate executive of fraud. 38-year-old Brett Immel was found guilty of hiding assets in his 2009 bankruptcy filing. He faces a maximum of 5 years in federal prison. In Grinnell last week, a mail carrier died after a wasp stung him when he reached into a mailbox during his normal route. 58-year-old Dwayne Kriegel was well-known and well-liked by those on his route. He had been a mail carrier for more than 30 years. There was also word of another death last week, the death of a man in Seattle. Now, normally, the death of a man 1,800 miles away would not make news in Iowa, but this one did. Because the man who died was Alfred Haynes, and if that name doesn't ring a bell, well, keep listening. Al Haynes was the pilot who landed that United Airlines jet that had an engine explode over western Iowa 30 years ago. Captain Haynes and his crew somehow kept that plane up in the air for more than 40 minutes until they could try landing at Sioux City's Gateway Airport. The plane crashed and exploded. 112 people died, but 184 lived. Haynes was considered a hero because without his efforts, experts said virtually everyone on that plane that July day in 1989 would have died. Al Haynes was 87 years old when he died last Sunday. There was also a story last week that just might have sent a shiver down your spine. Seems the Farmer's Almanac has come out with its winter weather forecast. Are you ready? The Almanac predicts the biggest drop in temperature is expected to take place this coming winter from the northern plains into the Great Lakes. Yep, that includes Iowa. And the Almanac doesn't stop there. It predicts that the Midwest will get above normal winter precipitation, so much so that springtime weather might be delayed. So you might wonder just how accurate is the Almanac? Well, remember how cold and snowy it was this past winter? The Almanac had predicted months ahead of time exactly the type of weather we received. But it's also been wrong lots of times. We can only hope it's wrong this time as well. Big-time college football made big news around the state this past weekend. Iowa State University opened its season with a heart-stopping 29-26 victory over Northern Iowa in three overtimes at Jack Trice Stadium. And the University of Iowa defeated Miami of Ohio 39-14. A couple of other stories from last week merit attention. One involves a new set of commercials just launched by the Des Moines Tourist Organization. The new video campaign is called The S's Are Silent, a reference to how outsiders may pronounce the name of Iowa's capital city. The commercials will air in Kansas City, Omaha, and Minneapolis starting today. The videos highlight dozens of places in the Des Moines Metro, including the Downtown Farmers Market, the Sculpture Park, the Botanical Garden, and much more. And one more note before I take off on this Labor Day, and this one will really make you feel good, I hope. Maybe you saw the story yesterday in the Des Moines Register. It was all about what may have been the most picture-perfect marriage proposal of all time here in Iowa. A farmer from Richland came up with the idea. His name is Aaron Adam, and he wanted to propose to his longtime girlfriend, Shelby Chapman. So with the help of some friends, Aaron drew some boundaries in a field near Richland. Then he planted corn with one color of tassels as a backdrop before going back and planting letters with a separate variety of corn. The letters spelled out, "Will you marry me?" Then, when everything was all grown in that field, Aaron Adam took Shelby Chapman up in a hot air balloon, where she could read his marriage proposal grown in corn below. She said yes. Told you it was a feel-good story. And yes, that is your summary of the past week's news from around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, reporting on this Labor Day from Washington, D.C., but promising to be right back in studio live this coming Friday when our guest on Local Talk will be Ames Mayor John Hala. Until then, have a fine holiday and a safe, healthy, and happy week.
Dennis, for the summary of news, and the polka music is in honor of Oktoberfest, which is coming to Bethesda Lutheran Church this week, even though it is September.
Oh, son, polka music is just sunny music, and there are those that feel polka music culminates within the final days of summer.
So it's the signal that summer is over?
Here we are, yeah.
Okay, well, the Bethesda Lutheran Church is announcing it first, and they're going to beat the Ames polka, or the Ames Oktoberfest by a little ways, and Priscilla Franken is a volunteer who is helping with the event. It's happening this weekend, and she stopped by KHY last week to tell you about it. Here's Priscilla.
The theme is Eat, Drink, Bethesda Makes Merry.
And this is an outdoor event.
Yes, it is outdoors, 1517 Northwestern Avenue, Ames, Bethesda Lutheran Church.
Which is the corner of
15th and Northwestern Avenue, right.
Okay.
We actually have entered into agreement with Torrent
Brewing Company.
Yes, to provide our own brew.
So you're having your own custom-made brew?
Yes, which is going to be great. Pastor Arnold was instrumental in meeting with them, and how about a specific brew that we can have at our Oktoberfest? So we're featuring that. Plus, we also have root beer and we have lemonade, non-alcoholic beverages available. We have the German-themed brats. We'll have homemade German potato salad. We'll have German chocolate cake and root beer floats. We'll have some side dishes as well. And, of course, a polka band. And we're having the polka music stay for the evening service that follows. The event is from 12 to 4:30, and then right at 4:30 we'll start the polka service, and that will be from 4:30 to 5:30.
What is a polka service?
Well, the polka service is going to be outdoors in the tent, led by the band. The Blue Stem Bellows Band is going to offer polka music during the event, and then they will also lead the service with music. And then we'll have a song leader as well. So,
will the songs be polka songs?
No, there'll be songs that people will know.
But no polka dancing during
the
service?
Well, I don't think during the service.
No dance floor?
Perhaps there could be. Who knows there? It's going to be informal, and I think even a beverage is allowed during the service if you want to continue.
This is the second annual?
Yeah. Second annual Oktoberfest. Last year we had the polka band as well. They didn't take a real active part in the service, as I understand it, but this year we're going to have them lead the outdoor service at 4:30.
So you're planning to make this a regular annual event?
Yes. And certainly we welcome the public to come to our event again this year.
Yes.
And lots of activities for kids. We're going to have events on the front lawn, lots of the stuff that they can do, and we'll have competitions. For example, we'll see who can hold out their Stein arm the longest. We'll have a nail driving contest. We'll have some lawn games. So it's going to be real interactive, focus on having fun, enjoying
the day. So
there'll
be food, there'll be games for the children and families,
yes.
There'll be dancing.
Polka dancing, and we'll have beer and wine, and we'll also have a full menu of brats, hot dogs, hamburgers, sauerkraut, you know, German potato salad. It's going to be, we think, just a enjoyable experience for anyone who wants to attend, and we welcome them to stop by. And
so this is an event for the general public.
It is. It is.
And is the real goal of this event to celebrate German culture?
Well, that's part of it.
Or to have a fall fest or to raise money?
Right. It's pretty much a German theme to it. Some of the German traditions are carried out at this. And
is there a sense of ownership of Oktoberfest because the Lutheran Church has its roots so clearly in Germany?
I think so. A large percentage of members who have German in their background. But certainly there's, I think the tie with Martin Luther and the Reformation is definitely linked to this whole theme of celebrating our German heritage.
Mm-hmm. Are some of the recipes of the food being served, are they family recipes
yes.
of people of German ancestry?
So, for example, the German potato salad is the
day
before.
Is that somebody's
before.
Family recipe?
Yes, yes. We're featuring that. And then German currant cookies that my great-grandmother gave to my mother as she was growing up on a farm. And they have a lot of spice in them. Of course, the currants. Everyone has maybe a favorite recipe or something that's been handed down from their parents or grandparents or a favorite aunt. And just come and enjoy the afternoon. Get to know your people in the community. Just come out of curiosity. Come out of your interest in something that's festive. Very informal. If you like polka music, come and dance. We're just looking forward to anybody who has an interest in this event to come and support it. Any funds that we do have available, we apply to our youth program at church.
Okay, so we're talking about Bethesda Lutheran Church's Oktoberfest, which is separate from the city's Oktoberfest.
Yes.
And that will be on this Saturday, September 7th, from noon until 4:30 p.m. It's a celebration of German culture and the heritage of the Lutheran Church. Thank you so much for coming. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg. I'm here with you today with Mr. Patch Larbaum. We are your hosts for today, and we're pleased to be with you here on this Labor Day and just exploring some of the really wonderful things that are available to us this week. Tinshi Tam has joined us with the studios. Thank you for coming.
You're welcome.
Tinshi Tam is the County Professor of Music at Iowa State University. She's also the ISU Carolinier. Did I get that right? Carolinier.
Yes.
For some reason, those words struggle with. In other words, she performs in the campanile, the sound that is probably the most central sound to Iowa State University.
Yeah.
Somebody who grew up in Ames, and it's in my blood.
It's simply iconic.
Iconic, yeah. So it's so nice to have you with us today. And you are here because the C-Hop Festival is coming to Iowa State next weekend.
Yes, the C-Hop Festival, maybe I will start with what C-Hop means.
That's a great place to start. What does C-Hop mean?
It's a very catchy name, but actually has an in-depth meaning. C represents carillon, H represents harpsichord, organ, and piano. So basically, now you understand this is a festival to feature some of the important and unique instruments, keyboard instruments that we have at Iowa State.
Okay, so these are the unique keyboard instruments. You have harpsichord, which is very old,
mm-hmm.
right? And then you have organ, which is also very old.
Yes.
And then you've got piano, which is newer.
Yes.
And then the carillon, which is the campanile, for us it's the campanile.
Yep.
Is that an old instrument or a new instrument?
Actually, it's a pretty old instrument.
Old, uh-huh.
It started with, especially in the European country, is for centuries they have belts.
Bell players.
And then it started to develop to have more belts and playing with a keyboard. And it started in the 1600s.
1600s.
So, yeah, so it kind of, in a way, started to develop from the European country and come to the America.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's also a very old. So these are all very historic instruments, and the piano is kind of a newcomer.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these instruments will be featured at the C-Hop Festival.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Actually, the C-Hop Festival, the inceptions of this festival started 2 years ago in 2017. This is our first C-Hop Festival. And the theme of that festival was dance music for keyboard instrument. And this time, we've focused our theme is on Eastern European music.
Okay.
So all the music will tie into this particular festival that will play with different keyboard instruments.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we have three guests coming in. For the carillon, we have Cohen Kosek. He is the director of Royal Carillon School in Mechelen, Belgium. And specifically, he will give a lecture on Russian bell culture. And
Russian
also,
bell culture.
Yeah, so it's very unique. Mm-hmm. I think we don't hear that much often. Mm-hmm. And that would tie into the Eastern European music theme.
Mm-hmm.
And he will also play carillon recitals on Saturday and focus on Russian music, Belgian music, and also some unique carillon.
And when on Saturday? Will it be in the afternoon or in the morning?
It will be afternoon, 2 o'clock.
So a good time to be on Central Campus.
Yeah, might be.
So you'll be performing in the campanile?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Might be bring a picnic.
Good time for a picnic.
And then after your lunch, and then you can enjoy great music. And then also we will offer a campanile tour after the concert. So if someone would like to have some exercises and actually look into the climb the steps and get into the campanile, and we do offer the tour afterwards.
Mm-hmm. How many steps?
It's 79 steps.
79, huh? She doesn't
know. I was just trying to keep it in secret so it won't scare people away. But the first 22 steps is a little bit tight. It's a spiral staircases.
Uh-huh.
And then we have five flights of stairs getting to the playing camp.
Uh-huh.
But it's
definitely worth seeing. Yes.
Yeah, especially you can get an up-close look at the belts.
At the belts.
Yeah, so those are really interesting.
Will you be giving the Will you be up there telling people, or will somebody else be?
Yeah, I will be there, mm-hmm. and then also will have some students helping. Giving the tours.
Too. Okay, so yeah. 2 o'clock the concert starts.
Yeah.
And it'll last for
about 45 minutes.
45 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. So the tour will immediately start right after the concert.
Okay, and this will be Russian music.
Russian music, Belgian music, and mm-hmm. also some standard Kalon repertoire.
And again, where is the performer coming from?
Belgium.
From Belgium.
Yeah, he uh-huh. is the director of the Kalon School.
Okay.
Yeah, and and then for the piano, we have a guest from the University of Michigan. He is actually the professor of piano and director of the doctoral studies in piano performance at the University of Michigan. And he will give us a talk and also a recital focused on the music of a Hungarian composer, Béla Bartók.
Béla Bartók.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he will have lectures and on Saturday morning, and then a recital on Saturday evening at 5.
Saturday evening at 5.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then also he will give a piano masterclass too. Yeah.
Okay. So after a blissful afternoon on Central Campus having a picnic.
Mm-hmm.
You can then go and hear a piano concert.
You have a piano concert.
Béla Bartók.
Yeah, Béla Bartók. Mm-hmm. But wait, we still have more.
There's more. Okay.
Yeah, it will be like...
The day's not quite filled out.
We have also an organ guest organist, and he is Michael Elspen. He is actually the director of worship and music at the St. John's Lutheran Church in Des Moines. And he's going to play a variety of Eastern European organ music, and he's also at...
And where will he perform this?
It will be in the recital hall on Alban Bar Organ at Iowa State.
And is it Alice Tully Hall, is that?
Martha Ellen Tai Recital Hall.
Martha Ellen Tai, right.
Yes, yes. Right. And he's going to play that recital at... Let me take a look. Make sure that I have it correct.
So this
3:30 on Saturday.
On Saturday, so the Kalon concert will be done by 3:30.
Yes,
and then you just walk across the street
exactly
to the music building.
Yep,
and where they have an organ.
Yes,
and then you can listen to an organ concert.
Yes. Yeah, and then after that, you can stay put, and then we have the piano.
Oh,
concert.
The piano concert is right after the organ concert.
Yes.
Okay, and what is that? Who's performing?
So it's the guest pianist is Logan Skelton, and he is from the University of Michigan.
Okay, and what is he performing?
Béla Bartók, music
but also
of Béla Bartók. Yes.
So both the organ and...
The organ will be a mix with Eastern European music, organ music.
Okay.
And it's a mix and have some early, 1600 composer to contemporary composer, but would be focused on organ music.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
there's so much diversity here.
Yeah.
I'm getting
yeah.
confused talking to you, but there is a program here.
Yes.
Which does outline it all, and there's a website.
Yeah,
that
there's a website. You can check into www.music.iastate.edu. And you can find the schedules there. And the festival starts at 5 o'clock on Friday. And we have actually two concerts featuring Iowa State students, Iowa State keyboard faculty to kind of kick off the festival. And then on Saturday, we start right in the morning at 9:30 and music all day until 7 o'clock.
Sounds fantastic. It really does.
Yeah.
So what's the music in the morning?
In the morning will be master classes and also the lectures on the bell ringing mm-hmm. and also lectures on the lecture recitals about Béla Bartók music.
And this is all available to the public. You don't have to
yes.
be a student, right?
No, no, mm-hmm. no. It's open to the public. Students is free. We have a couple of concerts. We have admission charges.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But just basically, it's free and open to the public.
Uh-huh.
And information, you can find it on the website.
Okay. And then let me just get this straight again. The guest concert, the guest performers, it's the guest performances start at 2 o'clock with the Carillon.
Yes.
On Central Campus.
Yes.
And then the festival moves to the music building.
Yes.
Across the street.
Mm-hmm.
And then first you have the organ.
Organ. 3:30.
At 3:30, and then you have piano?
Piano at 5:30.
At 5:30.
Mm-hmm.
And then when is the harpsichord?
The harpsichord will be on Friday.
On Friday?
Yeah.
Friday evening?
And Friday early evening, 6 o'clock, and we will feature our own faculty, Dr. Mariam Sack.
Okay, and that and also will be in the music building.
It will be also in the music building, yes.
Okay, so, and the address, for anybody who doesn't know where the music building is, it's very close to the Student Union,
yes.
And that's on the website as well.
Absolutely.
And again, what is the website?
www.music.iastate.edu.
Okay. Now, why is this happening? This is clearly a program put on by the music department at Iowa State.
Yes.
How did this convergence come together of all these instruments?
Okay. I think it's very unique. First off, a lot of places have piano, organ, and most likely it's a harpsichord. But Iowa State have one more instrument that's so unique is we have a carillon.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that it's very special and unique that we can have all the keyboard instrument to put on a festival. So for the public to explore the different sound, even though they all call keyboard, but mm-hmm. they have different sound, they have different music, they have different repertoire. So we can kind of experience all in one day or 2 days to feature different types of keyboard instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that is very special, and then it's also very unique for Iowa State that we can offer that.
Yeah, well,
experience.
In a way, are you kind of behind this festival? Are you the creator?
Yeah, actually, our keyboard faculty, we sit down and mm-hmm. together, and we realize that, well, why don't we do that all together
mm-hmm.
and put up a weekend? And
uh-huh.
so actually it's a collaborative among our keyboard faculty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the carillon, the campanile,
mm-hmm.
is kind of, in a way, an extreme. I mean, for those of us who aren't accustomed to keyboard, it's kind of an extreme version of a keyboard play
mm-hmm.
because it's really connected to bells and instead of, like, I don't know what we're used to. So in a way, it kind of highlights the concept of keyboard, right?
Yeah, actually, talking about that, I mean, the carillon, the way how you play it, it's like a combination of a piano and organ. With the organ perspective, we play with our hands and feet. So it's just like you play the organ with hands and feet. With the piano, if you understand the piano, is some way is like a percussion instrument. You have a hammer that strikes the strings.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And for the carillon, actually, you have the hammer that strikes the bells.
The bells. Mm-hmm.
So in a way, is that the concept of mechanics model, the way you think about how you play a piano, how your piano work, and how you play the organ, is kind of merge into
together.
It's very and that is in the carillon.
Uh-huh.
So somehow you realize that it's not only just a keyboard instrument, it has a meaning behind it, how we all connected to each other.
And
so,
it really highlights the mechanics of these kinds of sounds, how they happen.
That's true. And mm-hmm. also I think each keyboard instrument somehow we also have some music that tie into each other too. So
mm-hmm.
I think that is, in a way, that is naturally
mm-hmm.
We are interconnected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very, very nice. And mm-hmm. that is C-Hop.
C-Hop Festival.
That is C-Hop Festival.
Yeah.
And it's just a rare opportunity being here at Iowa State to have that kind of focus on these beautiful instruments. And thank you for coming in. Now, we're going to actually speak on Thursday morning at 7 o'clock with the performer who's coming in from Belgium, right?
Yes, he's arriving on Wednesday evening.
Okay.
So he's flying in from Belgium. So I think it will be really intriguing and neat that we can talk with him and see him firsthand.
See him firsthand. And Paul Hertz, one of our hosts here, will join us for the conversation because he's
fantastic.
An organ player.
Yes.
And so last question is it fun to play the carillon?
Yes, absolutely fun. This is my 25th years. And then I still found it fascinating and energized every time I go up and play and also see different carillons around the country and the world.
Are we rare that we have a carillon?
It's special.
It is special.
Yes, really special and unique. And one of the carillon the instruments of the carillon is every instruments are different. Every tower is different. Uh-huh. Every campanile is different.
Wow.
And
uh-huh.
so that really keeps you.
Special. Well, I know I can't think of anybody in Ames that doesn't love the campanile. So thank you so much for performing up there and giving us so much pleasure.
Yeah.
And thank you for coming in. And I will see you again Thursday morning. Well, we
Absolutely.
Will go in depth.
Mm-hmm.
And Cynthia, can we have some piano music? This is Bella Bartok. Romanian Dance Number 2 by Bella Bartok, performed by Robin McCabe. Well, Dave Martin is back. We have a monthly segment about the Ames City Council, or a report from the Ames City Council, and Dave has agreed to come in this morning and play that role. Thank you for coming in.
You're welcome.
We're just looking for some updates about what's happening, what's new and exciting at the Ames City Council. There was a decision on vacation lodging.
That's correct. This is something we've been looking into for a long time, and it really has to do with the ordinances around Airbnb and other sort of online platform services.
So people wanting to have Airbnbs in their houses or apartments.
And there are different ways that people have been doing that. And I think the main division has to do with whether the owner really lives in the house most of the time and just rents it out for people occasionally, or whether the owner just operates it as a purely guest lodging facility where they never live there. And we pretty much agreed on the first category earlier this summer that we had a way to make sure that that was being done safely and in the interest of the community. It took us a little longer.
So some of the current concerns have to do with safety, and they have to do with taxes, like paying taxes on the properties?
Those are both true, and the impact on the neighborhood.
Uh-huh.
So, yes, we want to make sure that people who land for a couple of nights in a totally unfamiliar house can do it safely. So we did apply the fire code safety regulations to those sorts of situations, even though the house as a whole might not be a rental, right? It's just someone lives in the house and they rent out a few rooms every now and then. We want to make sure it's safe for the visitors. Taxation is something that we required also because there is a hotel-motel tax in most Iowa cities, including Ames, and we wanted to make sure that was covered.
Covered, you mean that they don't bypass that tax, that you have to pay the tax if you have an Airbnb?
Correct. And actually, for Airbnb, that one platform, it's very straightforward because Airbnb collects the tax automatically. They just do it. But there are some other ways to rent that aren't really covered. So we looked into that as well. And then also, we were concerned about the impact on the neighborhood. It's quite different when the house next door to you has sort of a constant stream of strangers coming and going. And that's workable. I mean, it's not the end of possibilities there, but we just wanted to make sure it wasn't overdone.
Are there a lot of Airbnbs and vacation rentals in Ames?
I forget the numbers, but there are a lot of operators, and we could see this at council because as we talked about this on our agenda during multiple meetings over the past couple of years, we always had a handful of people operating these facilities who came and sort of explained to us what the experience was like for them and how they'd like to see it turn out.
Yeah, and I guess a lot of it has to do with parents coming to see their young people, you know, their children at the university, people wanting to come for reasons like that.
Yeah, sure. It's,
you know, it's we're really not thought of as a vacation area here.
No, but there are a lot of reasons that people might want to come to town. I mean, certainly visiting students, but there are visiting scholars, there are people visiting relatives. And I really think that there's a need for an alternate form of hospitality in Ames. And it can be really great. If you're coming to town for like 3 weeks, it can get tiresome to stay in a hotel. I mean, hotels are great, but it's different to be able to stay in a home. And so we call it vacation lodging, but that's just a category. That's, you know, short-term stay up to 30 days is considered vacation lodging and doesn't mean you have to be on vacation.
Right. So the law that was passed has to do with fire codes
Yeah, it requires fire compliance. And ultimately what we decided, I think the last real decision point was whether to allow it in all neighborhoods in town or not. And what we ended up agreeing on is to permit it in the neighborhoods that have higher density dwellings, like medium density and high density with bigger apartment buildings and such. But in the low density neighborhoods, so you think of these as the single family house neighborhoods, we agreed that they could operate there, but only a certain number of them in the neighborhood. We have like a 1,000-foot separation required between them. And even this constraint only applies to the situation where the owner doesn't live in the house and they just purely operate it as a rental for others.
Mm-hmm.
So if you live in your house, then you can do it anywhere in Ames. It's just that one category. I think of it as investment property that sort of is in healthy competition with hotels.
Yeah, and this has become a big issue in many areas of the country. I was recently in Marin County, north of San Francisco, and there are huge social wars going on over this issue because so many people are just buying property to make turn them into, you know, Airbnbs.
Absolutely. And that's something that we've seen in Ames. We have a lot of commercial pressure on residential neighborhoods in various forms. And so that was something that the council was interested in. Was this just another investment vehicle that that was sort of using our neighborhoods, you know, for kind of a portfolio rather than the neighborhood health? And so that's why we were interested.
So in some part of the motivation is to preserve sense of community, right?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and
but we wanted to allow for this sort of use because, you know, it
people
really...
People want to do it.
People want to do it, and it can be lovely. We want to think of Ames as a place that you're excited to come visit. And if this is an ingredient in that, then we're all for it, I think.
Okay, and an ongoing topic is the MetroNet Internet for anybody who's not up to speed on that, just give a brief summary of what that is and where we are with that right
now.
Sure.
Well, the highlights are this. We've been looking at how to improve internet services in town over the past couple of years. And the fact is that we have one major provider of really high-speed internet, and that's Mediacom, an old cable TV company that offers internet service as well. And it seemed like having some competition would be a good thing, both in terms of price and in terms of reliability and customer service. And so the council started looking into whether it would be possible for the city to launch its own utility. I think the city has done a great job with its electric utility, water utility, and so on. So that was something we started to look at.
This is something you've been looking into for quite a while, right?
Absolutely. I'm interested in this, and this was one of the things that sort of motivated me to first pay attention to what was going on at council. And so we started looking around there and had some fairly high-profile council meetings on the topic, and I think it attracted the attention of some providers from out of town, some internet providers who looked at the Ames market and said, hey, there really is an opportunity here for us. And so one of them showed up. Their name is MetroNet, and they're based in Indiana, and they operate internet services in a number of communities throughout the Midwest. They offer fiber service, which is technologically, it's really quite different than what most people have access to in Ames. It's optical fiber that goes all the way to the house. That's just not something that we have by and large in Ames. It has some superior reliability and speed capabilities. So they came to council and sort of told us what they plan to do here. And the short of it is that they're going to start building this network. They hope to be able to offer service to 80% of the footprint of Ames, right? That's a substantial amount. And they hope to be complete in the spring of 2022, weather permitting. Okay, well, we have winters here and we have mud, and it, you know, they have to dig, so that schedule could slip, but that's what they're hoping for. They also told us what level of service they'd be providing. You know, when I look at their price rates, if you're the sort of customer who wants 100 megabits a second or more, what the Federal Communications Commission considers reasonable broadband access, if that's what you want or currently have, as far as I can tell, you'll save like between $30 and $50 a month with the service over the current providers in town. This is a huge benefit to the local economy and just to the pocketbooks of people who are here. So I'm excited to see this happen. Competition is a great thing. And So I'm very happy they're coming here. I will say that people have to understand it's going to be disruptive. They're going to be tearing up neighborhoods to put in these fiber. Mm-hmm. They need to put in trenches. They're going to run from poles as well. You know, it's not going to be necessarily a pretty operation. But they have agreed that they'll have someone on site, a point person, who will respond to neighborhood concerns. The city's tuned into this. They're going to try to make it as painless as possible.
Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to understand all this. So this is a private company, right?
Yes.
So when a private company comes in, I know that originally there was some talk about a municipal service, but this is a private company. So can any private company come in and put in internet infrastructure, or does the city have to kind of arbitrate who gets to do that?
Pretty much any company can come in and offer this infrastructure. Uh-huh. We have no say.
So why are they coming to you?
So they're coming to Ames because of the market opportunity. Mm-hmm. They came to council because we asked them to come to council and tell us what the plan is. And we did that in the context of our mission of trying to ensure that everyone in Ames has good internet access. And that's where we come back to this figure. They're hoping to cover 80% of Ames's footprint. And our question is, what about everyone else?
Uh-huh.
So that's why
we can't really stop them from doing
it. We can't stop them. We can't make them serve everyone.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. They can serve whoever they want to, you know. Mm-hmm.
But they have to get permission to dig up the town, right?
Well, kind of. I mean, but not
kind
really.
Of.
Yeah.
So a lot of different internet companies could come, right? And
they
just
could.
Start digging up everywhere?
I'll tell you what they need is they need to be compliant with our rules about digging in the public right-of-way.
Okay.
But that's kind of like as long as they're behaving reasonably on the streets, then they get to do it. They don't need council approval for that sort of thing. And you're right. Other companies could flock to Ames and then all dig up the roads and all be in competition. But, you know, they're limited by what they see as the market opportunity and their capital needs to do it. It's going to cost them a lot of money to invest in this infrastructure on the ground before they get any subscribers at all.
Uh-huh.
But this is really meaningful for us as a city. You know, if we're going to think about offering a utility, we look at the private market and we can see that they have already decided there are enough subscribers in Ames to finance the build out of this big brand new network, right? And they're going to put all this money up front in order to dig it and put in all this equipment, and they're going to make money in the end, good profit. That's why they're doing it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so the question is there a role for a city to do it? We're not after profit. We're after serving
service.
The constituents. We just have to cover costs for the 20% who will have no other options.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that council will be talking about again. What are we going to do in light of what Metronet has decided to do in Ames? What do we need to do for the rest of the community?
Okay. So to be continued.
To be continued.
Okay.
Yes.
David, thank you for coming. Just real quick, I want to move on here in a minute, but The Healthy Life Center vote is coming up. Mayor Hala will be coming in actually this Friday, and I think discussing that with Dennis Hart at length. But I know you're a big supporter of the project, right?
Yes, I am. And in fact, everyone on the council is a big supporter, which I think is interesting. First, all our votes towards authorizing it have been unanimous. Mm-hmm. But council doesn't agree on everything. We have a lot of split votes on topics. So I think it's meaningful that from all our different perspectives, we agree this is really a great way to invest in the future of AIMS, to try to keep people healthy. I think of it as akin to an educational investment. Mm-hmm. You know, we have some private schools in town. They're great, you know, but they're not for everyone. And I think this is a way that we can solve some immediate needs, like we want an indoor swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
And really do something long term for the benefit of the community, to make it the sort of place that we want to live and we want to attract other people to.
And just one more thing real quick, the gay pride, the crosswalk is coming in.
That's true. It's coming tomorrow.
Yeah. And it's right in time for Gay Pride, which will be happening next weekend.
It's Saturday.
Saturday.
Yeah.
And the crosswalk will be where?
It's right out the studio here. It's mm-hmm. at 5th and Douglas.
5th and Douglas. And it's going to be a multicolored crosswalk.
Exactly. Multicolored.
Watch for that. What day is that going up?
It's going up tomorrow, Tuesday.
Okay.
And in fact, there's an event at 4 p.m. to dedicate the crosswalk.
Okay.
So I invite everyone to come take part in that.
Okay. Thank you so much, David, for coming.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it. And Pat, before we go out, I wanted to briefly play this interview that you and I did in Eastern Iowa. I think we have time.
Okay.
If we do it real quick. Pat and I were in Eastern Iowa, and at Effigy Mounds.
And quite an art exhibition there.
Quite an art exhibition.
Be Wild, Rewild, Iowa.
Yeah. And it was a lot of great artists. And one of the artists did something called seed bombing, which we thought was really fun and something we wanted to share with you as we go out. So if we don't have time to close out Local Talk, this has been Local Talk, but we want to go out with telling you about the seed bombing. So, Cynthia, why don't you play Sydney Purcell.
Sydney Purcell Hinganyaki, Bahoje Minyaki, Hino Hinganyaki, Kiraje Munje Nyaki. Hello and good day to you all. My name is Sydney Purcell. I am oldest daughter. I'm a member of the Iowa Tribe of Kansas and Nebraska, and I'm also a part of the Bear Clan. For the Be Wild Rewild event at Effigy Mounds, I have created a machine. It's a touchable piece of art. It is a functional piece of art. You can buy a seed ball from a gumball machine. So instead of buying candy, you can put in your quarter and purchase a ball of seeds that's been packed in dirt and clay, take it home and plant it in your yard, and actually contribute to the rewilding effort. I really wanted to make something that had an impact and could actually help create change versus just kind of pointing out the problems.
It's very tactile.
Yeah, one of the things that always frustrated me about going to museums and art galleries is that I could never touch the work. And I'm a very tactile person. I want to touch everything. So when I started creating work myself, I wanted to do things that people could approach with more than one sense. So you're not alienating as many people that might not be interested in art. You can get children to touch it, or you could get other people to taste your artwork. So I have different pieces, different styles of art. None of them are the same, but they all are interactive in some way. I try to make my work interactive. So whether it's touching it, tasting it, smelling it.
So explain seed bombing and then give us a recipe.
Sure. So seed bombs are a mixture of dirt and compost or red clay. I used red clay because that's what's in my backyard, that you mix together. There's not a strict recipe, but I did like half and half. It's a little sticky, but you don't want it too wet because you want it to be able to still form into a ball. You have to make sure it's nice and wet as well so you can actually mold it. And then you just put some seeds in the middle and make a little ball.
It's more than just a few seeds. How many different varieties?
About 20 in there.
Yeah.
I have a mixture of milkweed seeds. Those are very important for pollinators and for the butterflies. And then I also have just a mix of wildflower seeds that is specific to the region here in Iowa.
And how do you get the seeds inside the ball?
I used a mat and just laid it down on my kitchen table and just kind of spread the seeds out on those and then just kind of picked it up with the clay. The clay is just kind of in a big chunk, and I just pulled a piece off of it and then just kind of like dipped it in the seeds that I had and then formed the ball after that. I dried mine out in the sun just because it's a lot faster and it makes them hard enough to
not stick together in the machine. So it took like a day or two, depending mm-hmm. on how humid it was outside. But one thing that's important to know is that seeds need to undergo a winter for them to be able to germinate. So they need to experience a winter. And when I did the project the first time, it was in March, so winter had already happened. So I just put the seed balls in my refrigerator for 2 weeks to get them to experience that winter.
And that's
then
enough.
You could plant. Yeah, so 2 weeks was enough in the freezer, and then you could plant them. And they think that they had gone through a winter. But some of these ones have not been frozen yet, but because they're being planted in the fall, they'll go through a winter, and then they'll bloom the following spring.
Do you have a website?
I do. My website is sydneypurcell.com.
You want to spell that, please?
Sure. It's sydneypurcell.com.
Thank you so much for your contributions to the
You have been listening to Local Talk. We have been your host today, Pat Schlarbaum and Ursula Rudenberg. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process, starting with Iowa, first in the nation.
Organized labor brought us the middle-class lifestyle itself. 40-hour work week, basic labor protections, child safety standards, the weekend. These things didn't just happen. They happened because people stood up and demanded them. And now it's time that we stand up and empower workers in new ways.
That was South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg. Today's Labor Day, a holiday created in the late 19th century to honor American workers and what they contribute to society. But these days, how much does the U.S. actually value working people? Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders says not enough.
As a result of that war against the working class by the corporate elite, what we have seen is the decimation of working families all across this country.
Yesterday, China and the U.S. imposed their latest round of tariffs on each other. The Iowa Farmers Union is a grassroots member organization, and Aaron Lehman, its president, weighed in on the quality of U.S. trade negotiations right now.
With multinational corporations, they have a pretty good voice at the table in those agreements. But ordinary farmers do not, and ordinary workers don't have those same ability to negotiate in good faith under these trade agreements. So we need better trade agreements.
The politicians who negotiate trade agreements are often not the people who are impacted by their decisions. That's one of the reasons why Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren promised more involvement in government decisions by labor unions when the Iowa Federation of Labor invited candidates for president to their annual convention earlier this summer.
On every major decision, unions will have a seat at the table, whether we're talking about health care or trade or transportation or manufacturing policy. Unions will have a seat at the table.
Also at the convention, New Jersey Senator Cory Booker told the dozens of tables of labor delegates about a small mining town in southern Iowa called Buxton. The town used to supply coal to the railroads. By 1927, all of the residents of Buxton were gone because railroads started using other types of fuel. But before that, Booker's family lived there.
It was where European immigrants and black migrants from the South actually joined together. The book about this place calls it American Utopia because they joined together in labor. They would go down in the mines, black and white, and carve out from the earth their American dream. This is who we are. We are a nation that comes from hard work, from the dignity of labor.
From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.